first off, you got to understand that the U.S. was a big stumbling block for the globalists. So in order to get passed through, around, whatever you want to call it, the United States has to be taken down.
Hello and welcome back to Soar Financially, where we discuss the macro to understand the micro. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the JR Mining guy on Twitter and the CEO of the Soar Financial Group. Really appreciate you joining us here for another fantastic discussion here on our channel. It is with Bill Holter. He's a precious metals expert and precious metals broker. You can find more about him on billholter.com. He's a returning guest. We had him on back at the end of October, October 23rd. We uploaded the video. And it's time to recap some of the views, some of the discussions, and see if anything has changed or if everything is still the same old. Are we still in the same environment as we were before, and to same environment maybe the Fed makes us believe as well. I'm really excited for this discussion, but before I switch over to my guest, there's a subscribe button down here somewhere. I give up on pointing it exactly where it is. It's being moved every time I mention it, but really appreciate a subscribe and a like as well. That shows us that we're inviting the right guests and we're asking the right questions, of course. So thanks for that. Now let me bring on my guest, and I'm excited for this discussion. Bill, thank you so much for joining me again.
Thanks for having me, Kai.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, really appreciate it. And Bill, let's start with a holistic question. Has anything changed since last October?
I would just say that if you want to call it the plan is further along. I guess on a daily, we're to the point of information overload now. And it's almost like no headline is stupid enough to be shocking anymore.
That's very true. Okay. Let's cut through that noise together, Bill, because we talked about a number of indicators during our last conversation. Let's follow up on them. And of course, I've earmarked the Fed, of course, as a big topic of discussion here as well. And let's start with a bit of a triggering question. Did you think that Fed actually did a good job where we're at right now? It seems like they've pulled all the right stops. They haven't been too wrong yet. And it seems like everything's playing out as predicted. Transitory inflation, slower rate cuts, things like that. Like, curious what your thoughts are on that topic.
Let me go a lot broader than, you're looking at, has the Fed done the right thing by raising rates? Understand that the Fed is now, 110 years old. And if you've ever read G. Edward Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Isle, then you'll understand that where we are now was the plan from 100 years ago. Basically, what has happened is the American structure, if you will, has become hyper indebted. And first off, you got to understand that the U.S. was a big stumbling block for the globalists. So in order to get passed through, around, whatever you want to call it, the United States has to be taken down. And it's my view that this long-term plan of taking the United States down is, you're looking at the end game right now. We have the highest indebtedness on any ratio, however you want to look at it, whether it be individuals, corporations, states, the federal government, whatever. The way to take the system, the financial system down, and the social aspect is we can get into that if you want. But from a financial standpoint, what have they done? If you wanted to take this Ponzi scheme down, what would you do? First off, you would stop growing the money supply. You'd actually shrink the money supply. And money supply now for the last 2 years has shrunk. We're probably 4 or 5% lower today than we were January 1st, 2022. So that's the first thing, is they shrunk the money supply. The second thing, they started raising interest rates. And what does interest rates do? It makes things worth less, and it makes it more difficult for any company. And we can get into the country itself, because we've got over $6 trillion coming due this year that has to be refinanced. But it prevents many companies from being able to refinance. Just look at many of the commercial properties all over the country that are needing to be refinanced. They can't get it done because the numbers that worked at 2% don't work at 5 or 6%. So they've raised rates. you know, that's another pin in the bubble. And then as far as attracting capital to the United States, what have we done? We confiscated $300 billion of Russian treasury assets, and now they're talking about using that $300 billion to rebuild Ukraine. So you've got mega money all over the world looking at the United States and saying, hey, wait a minute. If they can do that to Russia, they can certainly do that to us. We're not putting more money into the United States. So really, you've had a 1-2-3 punch at the hyper indebtedness. I mean, it's a classic plan on how to blow up a Ponzi scheme, and that's what I believe they're doing.
Always questions like I ask in that scenario is like, what's the motivation? Like who's gaining from blowing up the U.S.? Like, it sounds like it's internally created as well. Of course, there are external factors. Let's leave the East out for a second. I'm curious, like, what are the internal factors? And, like, who's internally motivated to take down the U.S.?
Well, internally, it's anyone who's being paid by the globalists. It's anyone who's sold their soul to Satan, whatever you want to call it. I mean, this is a globalist plan. And the United States, I mean, especially under Trump, because he is a nationalist, they're trying to do this all over the world. So it's, you know, it's a globalist plan. George Soros, Klaus Schwab et al.
Just to frame it, make it holistic picture as well. Like, what is their plan? Like, what is their end goal? Like, what do they gain besides power and influence, of course? But let's assume they take the U.S. down. There's global turmoil. Do they gain additional influence? Like, what is their end game? What's their plan? Like, what's their business plan?
Well, it's total dominance. I mean, yeah. Think about it. What they want is a CBDC worldwide. They want one world currency so that they can control everybody. I mean, with a CBDC, you and I doing this conversation would completely ruin our credit score. By the time the interview was done, our access to capital, which thus means our access to being able to buy anything, including food, is shut off. So, the plan is total domination.
Okay, that makes sense. Should we all be buying Starlink, or is there any alternative for us to communicate?
It's hard to say. If we're on a CBDC system and you're shut off, you might have Starlink, but how long could you pay for it? You know, how would you be able to go to a grocery store? How would you get medical services? How would you pay if you have a mortgage? How would you pay the mortgage? How would you pay for your electricity, your water, et cetera, et cetera? If they can control your bank account, they can control your life. And people will be in fear of saying what they really think.
That's what we're witnessing already, that in the East, like Russia and China as well, especially people just putting down flowers of being arrested. So that's already something we're seeing.
We just saw that a year ago, or a little over a year ago in Canada with the truckers. If you donated $10 to the truckers' cause, they confiscated your bank account. Now, that's been ruled as unconstitutional, but guess what? These people went for however long with their bank account frozen.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's been reversed. I wouldn't say reversed, but it's been shown, or the judge had some guts to actually say, okay, this was illegal action. So we'll see how that turns out, because apparently there's no personal, it's not personal injury, but they're suing Premier Trudeau now personally as well. So for that. Where do you see the cracks appearing now? Like you say the plan is developing, the plan is further along. Like, what are some of the factors you're looking at, Bill? Like, where are some of the cracks showing? Where's the plan being sort of revealed to stay with that sort of path of questioning here?
The biggest cracks were the obvious ones. The biggest cracks are in real estate. I mean, if you look at the, I think last year of 2023 in the U.S., the amount of single family homes that actually closed and changed hands, that volume was down about 50%. So I don't know if you're a technician or not, but classically, from a technical basis, price always follows volume. And I mean, obviously there was less volume because of higher interest rates. You had less people that were able to afford a mortgage. I mean, if you had X amount of dollars, if you could afford $1 million house in 2021, by the end of 2022, end of 2023, you probably could only afford a $600,000 house. It also has affected people that have a home with a locked in low mortgage. They're not going to move because they can't afford the new mortgage. The real blatant crack has been in commercial real estate. I mean, how many commercial buildings this year are up to refinance their debt? And when you do it with commercial real estate, it's based on cash flow. And many of these deals were done. Here's an example. There was a hotel that was sold in 2015 for $605 million. They put $300 million down. They borrowed $305 million. They walked away from the property in 2022, and it was seized late last year. And that debt is now being offered for $150 million. So that $605 million property is now valued. You could buy it for $150 million. I mean, that's a 75% haircut. My point being, someone has to take that loss. Obviously, the $300 million that they put down, that's gone. But within the banking system, there's another $150 billion, that's gone. No, I'm sorry, million dollars. It's just one property. What I'm getting at is these losses are piling up. Who is going to eat the losses? Are they going to end up on the Federal Reserve's books? You know, like what happened back in 2008, 2009. At this point, I mean, the answer to that is yes. But the Federal Reserve itself lost $114 billion last year. And the last I saw, their total equity was only $65 billion. So now you're looking at the central bank that issues the world's reserve currency is technically insolvent.
There was a big article in the Financial Times yesterday with the headline, "Bad Property Debt Exceeds Reserves at Largest U.S. Banks." So we're seeing that exactly what you're saying.
There you go.
They can't back up the debt anymore, because the reserves are much smaller now than the debt they owe on some of those commercial real estate properties.
Yeah, and understand, after the Great Depression, that was the greatest fear for the Fed, was to get a deflationary event that they couldn't turn, they couldn't reflate. And I mean, it looks like that's what's happening. And we haven't even talked about derivatives yet, but there's $2 quadrillion worth of derivatives. And every single derivative that was ever written has an interest rate assumption in that contract. And rates have gone higher. And when rates go higher, stuff becomes valued less because of the discounting, you know, the way you do the math on it.
One question I've asked guests just the last couple of weeks here as well is, why did the Evergrande debacle not cause a bigger ripple effect worldwide? Because there's a lot of sovereign debt tied up in that debacle as well. It hasn't caused much more of a bang in the markets. I figured that might be, the straw that breaks the camel's back, but apparently it was priced in. The market just shrugged its shoulders and just ignored. But that was a $300 billion nugget, right? Can you make sense of that?
You used the word yet, and I think that's the operative word, because it's all part of it's the whole system. Have they been able to kick the can down the road? Yeah, they did for years and years by lowering rates. Now we've got the interest rate structure has gone up, call it threefold. So, it's a huge move upward in interest rates. And I think Evergrande was one of the very first, but it certainly is not going to be the last, and it's going to spread. You know, that type of problem is going to spread worldwide. Commercial real estate worldwide is going to be hammered. And I do want to mention one other thing, because we talked back in October, and it did look like the stock market was about ready to puke, and we've had this big rally in the stock market. I just posted on my site yesterday an article talking about the Buffett indicator, where what he does is he looks at total market cap of stocks in the U.S., versus GDP, and we're as high as we've ever been. So if you look at that and you say, well, this time it's going to be different, I think, yeah, this time it's going to be different. And I put as a quote in there that this time it's going to be different because in 2008, 2009, what I and other many other analysts missed was that the Federal Reserve, central banks all over the world, the U.S. Treasury, sovereign treasuries all over the world would blow their balance sheets to pieces in order to save the system. Now the question is, who's going to save them?
Absolutely. No, Bill's like, you know, we were unfortunately recording maybe this interview 1 hour too early because NVIDIA is reporting in about 45 minutes after our, yeah. or right around we end this conversation. And to, for some reason, I can't shake the feeling that it's make or break for the stock market with those results. If they disappoint, the market will, I wouldn't go as far as the market collapses, but it will definitely correct by 5 to 10%. NVIDIA is already down 4% right now. People are taking their gains off the table. So I'm curious what those numbers will show. Too bad, like we're recording this ahead of those numbers because it might be a different discussion in about 45 minutes time.
Well, it's interesting. It's interesting. If you take the what they call now the Magnificent Seven, in 2023, I think they accounted for 90% of the various indexes gains. I mean, if you took those out, if you took those seven out, you would have stocks were down for the year.
Absolutely. It's those seven stocks that keep everything up. Everything else is down. Like I like looking at the mining stocks, of course, like the S&P 500. I think Newmont is always ranked in the bottom 50, right? So that's what I look at. I generally don't follow the main markets too closely. It's really, I'm just curious like what the indication is here. But as you said, like the market has rallied 25% since we last talked. The market turned around like 3 days after we posted the interview, which was absolutely insane. So Bill, a couple of things I still want to talk on. We started our conversation talking about the Fed and just want to follow up on a couple of things, especially on their fiscal policy or monetary policy here. And of course their rate cut policies as well. Question, two part question. A, do you see your rate cut happening anytime soon, meaning within the next 3 months? And what would a rate cut even signal? Is that, maybe I even have to backpedal. I think we need to talk about, are we in a recession? Yes or no? And B, what would a rate cut mean to that discussion? I think that's quite vital to it because it depends on where you stand on the recessionary debate as well.
It depends on whether you're looking at the entire economy or the private sector. The entire economy, they say, no, it's not in a recession. If you look at the private economy, I mean, here an example came out yesterday was, Home Depot. It was their fifth quarter in a row where they had lower revenues, lower profits. That tells you that the housing sector is in a recession. The private sector is in a recession, but don't forget the Treasury is running a $1.5 to $2 trillion deficit. When deficit money is borrowed, it's spent. And when it gets spent, it becomes part of GDP. So while they may be able to say, overall, GDP is not declining, it's actually growing. The only reason is because the federal government is borrowing. And I think I mentioned just a little bit earlier, this year alone, the U.S. Treasury is going to have to borrow $6 trillion to pay for stuff that's rolling over. In addition to that, they've got another $1.5 trillion or $2 trillion in deficit that they're going to have to fund. So you're looking at $7.5-$8 trillion that the Fed's going to have to borrow. Again, where's that money going to come from?
Yeah, absolutely. Like we've seen bond auctions, and you mentioned that international and sovereign debt investors are not at the table right now. I just saw an article on Zero Hedge. I haven't had really a chance to dive deep into it, but the headline is yield surge after terrible 20-year auction with biggest tail on record, meaning the Fed had to pick that up. That tail, as far as I understand. So what does that mean? Like, where are the buyers and where did they come from 2 weeks ago when we refinanced about $160 billion, I think?
Well, the foreign buyers, I mean, look at Japan and China. They were the two biggest holders of treasuries. They've been bleeding their treasury holdings down for years. And just look at the BRICS. Why is there such a thing as the union of the BRICS? The whole idea behind it is they want to get out from under the boot of the U.S. dollar. Because they understand that the dollar is strictly a fiat currency. It's a Ponzi scheme. And I mean, if you listen or read any of Putin's speeches, you'll hear him every time say, we want to do business, but the trade that we do, we want to be fair trade and fairly settled. In other words, they want to trade something real for something real, as opposed to something real for something that's nothing. And that's what the deal is. I mean, the U.S. does not, we have a huge trade deficit because we get products in and we send freely printed dollars back out. And that's why there is a BRICS, because they want to get away from, their view is the danger of holding dollars. And that's one reason why many of these central banks have been buying gold very, very strongly for the last 2 or 3 years, because they understand where this goes. They're going to end up with big black holes within their balance sheet that used to be dollars. So they're trying to replace those with something that's real and something that will go up in purchasing power as all these fiat currencies collapse.
Bit of a cheeky follow-up question. Why is Argentina then joining the U.S. dollar system? Is the peso just that much worse?
I mean, that's obviously politics plays a part of it. It's pretty interesting, though, that Milei is he's a nationalist. Sounds like he does not want, you know, to be a globalist, but yet he's hitching his train to the dollar. I mean, the reverse of that, look at Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia has cut deal after deal with Russia and China, and they've come out and they said they will accept other currencies other than dollars, which was a huge change from the 1973 petrodollar. And then going one step further, the United Arab Emirates came out and they said they will not accept, they'll accept foreign currencies, but they will not accept dollars. So, I mean, you got a good part of the world trying to back away from dollars, and they're doing so in their own best interest.
Bill, last time we talked about debt refinancing and debt servicing in particular, about $1 trillion. We're still around that level, a little higher now, of course. And I think it's a good bridge topic as well to talk a bit about the U.S. elections. We're in 2024. We have to bring it up.
If we have them.
Okay. You have to elaborate on that, but let's throw that into one question then. Why is that debt servicing topic not being A, more politicized, and B, talked about?
Well, because first off, there's no answer to it. I mean, it's a mathematical problem that really cannot be solved. I mean, it's not solvable. At this point, mathematically, we either default and don't pay, or they print dollars in the trillions to make the payment. Either way, you end up with zero, because when all is said and done, that's where the purchasing power of the dollar is going. So, I mean, that's why I think nobody's talking about it on either, you know, you're not seeing the Democrats talk about it, you're not seeing the Republicans talk about it, because nobody has an answer. And it's like you stick your head in the sand and hope you don't get your ass blown off.
I think from what I've heard so far, none of the candidates has really released their policies. But from what I hear, it's all about tax cuts and increasing deficit spending. So it's actually the opposite of what they should be doing. So, right. And I think it might be political suicide talking about tightening the belt in the U.S. that's already not feeling that great.
Right.
So interesting. Bill, one of the topics we also need to talk about, we briefly touched on, is the bond yields and how they will develop. Curious what your views are on that as well. I have a guess what the answer is, but I'm curious what your thoughts are and where do you see the 2 year and the 10 year headed, for example?
Well, you asked before regarding the Fed. I don't think the Fed is going to cut rates just on their own. I think they're going to wait for some type of, I think they're going to be forced into making a cut. But when all is said and done, I do believe that the dollar is going to be crashing so badly that the Fed is going to have their hand forced, and they're going to have to tighten rates, have to raise rates as the only way to protect the dollar. So I guess my answer is the Fed's in a box, because if they lower rates from here, then you're going to kick off just natural dollar weakness. And that will coincide with some type of a negative event, whether it be a bank's going under, you get a slew of real estate foreclosures, you know, big commercial real estate foreclosures. The the Fed will be forced into a cut is my belief. And I also believe that because of the action of the dollar, they're going to be forced into raising rates into a weak economy, which obviously is, you know, that's not the policy they would prefer, but it's the policy they're going to have to do. Is they're going to have to raise rates to support the dollar, which, again, raising rates on such a hyper indebted system, you know, now it's a systemic event.
Yeah, it's the question: system versus U.S. dollar. I think, right?
Right.
What do we save? Right? Is it really the U.S. dollar, or do we give up the dollar to save the system? I think that's the debate.
Right. Yeah, and just to go back, because I made the comment, if we have an election, it's my view that I believe there's a less than a 50-50 chance that we even have a election in November, and I simply say that because the policies have been so stupid and have pissed off the average person and even people on the left who are not, you know, far left progressives. They're pissed off at seeing what's going on with the border. They're pissed off at what they're seeing in schools and teachers being forced to lie to parents that their kids aren't getting sex changes and blah, blah, blah. What I'm getting at is I think they went so far off the road that they're going to realize at some point they're not going to be able to cheat enough to steal the election. And if they come to that realization that they're not able to cheat enough, then you'll get some type of false flag. They'll kick the table over. A perfect example was, I think, yesterday they announced there will be no national elections in Ukraine this year because of the war. And I mean, I could easily see that happen in the United States for whatever type of false flag they come up with. But they do understand if Trump gets back in and we do have a Republican Congress and Republican Senate, the amount of arrests and people going to prison will be unprecedented.
What happens if the sitting president dies of old age before the election?
Oh, wow.
I don't know. It was just a thought that crossed my mind when you talked about that. It was like, that'd be a natural event that would push things out. We don't even need an external or a black swan event to push that, that direction.
Well, I mean,
I'm just thinking out loud here. Maybe I shouldn't, but I'm just curious what the scenario would is like.
What you're asking is whether or not we would follow the Constitution. I mean, under following the Constitution, Kamala Harris would be president until January 20th or whatever it is next year, and we would have the election and the results of the election. Whoever was elected president would become president January 20th of next year. That's what the Constitution says. What they would do, how it would play out, your guess is as good as mine.
Okay. Because no, we don't have to go that way.
It's not followed.
No, exactly. I've just been watching way too much social media footage on certain events here. One last thing on the Fed and the potential rate cut. I'm curious because we talked about, you know, the decay of the dollar. I'm curious if a Fed rate cut is the beginning of the end. Is that would that be sort of the Damocles sword that's sort of hanging over the U.S. dollar? As soon as the Fed starts cutting, the U.S. dollar is done. Is that maybe too extreme, or is that something you would agree with?
If the let's say in the March meeting between now and the meeting, they decide we're going to cut rates. I don't think they will, but they decide that they're going to cut rates, you would then see weakness begin in the dollar. And I think that would pretty much push the boat from shore and it would be all downhill from there. I think it's, you got to keep in mind, if they cut rates, you got to wonder, you need to know, why did they cut rates? What were there any events ahead of time that forced them to cut rates?
Absolutely. Okay, no, that makes sense. And we really can't predict those because the data is definitely not pointing at a rate cut right now. So at least not the next two sessions. So, Bill, you're a precious metals expert, of course, writer and, of course, broker about it as well. So I'm curious, the role of gold. Has it changed at all? And I think we need to talk about the recent price move above $2,000 and the new floor that's been established.
I don't think gold has a new role. I think the role of gold is money, and everything else is credit. I mean, J.P. Morgan said, testified close to those words in Congress. The reason you want to own gold or the reason you want to own silver is because they cannot default. And what we talked about earlier, the world being, or the literally the whole world, but led by the U.S., is hyper indebted. And we're moving into the phase, and you're already starting to see it, we're moving into the default phase. And that's why you want to own gold. That's why you want to own silver, because in a world that is defaulting around you, gold nor silver can default. And it goes back to Richard Russell, for years and years and years, said that when this thing when it finally blows up and goes down, the one who loses the least will be the winner. There's not going to be any outright winners that profit from the collapse, but there will be those that have gold and silver. They will have capital when the system reboots, when the bulk, the majority, especially if you agree with the great taking, which I do, because I do believe that that's the plan, is to basically take your assets. If you have capital when this thing reboots, your family will have wealth for generations upon generations.
Hold on, just switching here. There we go. Bring him back on the screen here. That's interesting, Bill. Like, we need to talk about U.S. dollar and gold as well. Gold's value will increase. I think we're certain about that. The question is by how much, and will it buy us more, or will it remain at the same level because the U.S. dollar is just so much worse? I think that's a question I want to discuss with you as well.
I think that's an easy one, because there is all kinds of leverage in the gold and silver markets, but that leverage is to the short side. And there's leverage, obviously, in the stock market, the bond market, that's on the long side. In other words, borrowed money has been and is being used to prop up stocks, prop up bonds, but it's also being used to suppress the price of gold and silver. And it's done via naked futures contracts on both COMEX and the LBMA. So what that does is that increases the supply, if you will, but it's supply of paper metal. It's not real metal itself. Once credit breaks, that's when, or once credit is much more difficult to get, that's when you're going to see asset prices declining in vast swaths, because the debt has been pulled. On the gold and silver side, the way to close that trade, they're going to be forced to buy, not sell, because they've already sold. So the suppression scheme has been done with naked short contracts.
Gotcha. Like, Bill, one last question on the gold topic, and it's something that's puzzling me a little bit based on everything we've discussed right now. Why aren't the generalists, general investors, buying gold right now? I'm just looking at the latest gold report from the World Gold Council. We're still seeing outflows, in particular in North America, from the ETFs. Yes, it's paper gold, I get it, but bullion is a bit different, but still, there's outflows. Even the bullion trade has been decreasing. I think the bullion sales have been decreasing. The question is, why is that? Based on everything we've just discussed over the last 36 and a half minutes.
Well, the first part of your question was about the generalists. Generalists basically chase trends. And what we just discussed, I mean, they've suppressed gold, they've suppressed price, they've suppressed the miners. So you're not going to have the generalists follow that, because the price action has been horrible. They've painted the picture. So the generalists, what are they buying? They're buying the Magnificent Seven. As far as metal flowing out of North America, that's an easy one. All you have to do is look at the premium in Shanghai for gold of $50, and there's a premium north of $2 for silver on the Shanghai exchange versus the COMEX and the LBMA. So you've got natural arbitrage that's buying gold in the West, buying silver in the West, and selling it in Shanghai, selling it in the East. So you've got and they're locking profit in on every single trade. It's automatic profit, as long as it gets delivered, it's insured, and you get paid on the other end. You've locked in a profit. So that's, you're watching metal flow from west to east.
Gotcha. Where are you investing right now? Last question. If I were to come to you today with $100,000, say, Bill, can you invest this for me? How would you do it? And again, given this is not investment advice, this is just a rather like a more of a general question. Like, where do you see the trends? Where would you put your money right now?
Well, I view the world as defaulting. The entire global financial structure is in the process of defaulting. So I think it's a no-brainer. You just buy physical gold, you buy physical silver, and you will have something when the smoke clears. If it were someone who had debt, then you've got to think, well, would I rather pay my debt down or would I rather hold gold or silver? I personally do still have some debt at very low interest rates, and that's why I've not paid it off. But I have gold, I have silver that could easily pay that off. And why would I want to give up ounces now to pay off a 3.5% loan or a 4% loan when you could see metals within a short period of time, once this thing blows up, you could see metals double, triple. You could see 10 baggers. So, why use ounces at current prices, which are suppressed, when if there is a system to pay the debt down, I'll be able to do it. And if there's not a system to pay the debt down, once there is a system reboot and the foreclosures begin, then I'll use the gold and silver. And one piece of advice, if you do have debt, I'm a proponent of being at least 6 months, preferably a year ahead on the monthly payments, because when this goes down, that puts you at the back of the line for repossessions, foreclosures, etc. That'll give you time to be able to liquidate gold, liquidate silver, or what have you, to pay your debt off.
No, fantastic. Awesome. Bill, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Really, really did. And where can we find more of you? Where can we follow your work?
You can go to my website, billholter.com. It's not quite a year old now. You can subscribe to it whenever I post something. It'll show up in your mailbox. There is a contact button on the website if you want to contact me. If you want to contact me directly, my business email is bholter@proton.me.
Perfect. Bill, really, really appreciate it. Really appreciate it for your time. Thank you so much. It was very insightful. And to everybody else, really appreciate you tuning in. Thank you so much for watching SOAR Financially. I hope you enjoyed this discussion here with Bill Holter. If you did, please leave a like. It really helps us bring guests like Bill on and other great guests, of course, as well. It helps us broaden the reach of our interviews, brings like-minded investors to this channel as well. Leave a comment. What are you doing? How are you investing right now? Where do you see the world turning? And to which way is it trending, of course? I think the direction is pretty clear, to be honest, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts as well. And to really appreciate you tuning in. We'll be back with lots more. Thank you so much. Take care. Good luck out there.